Before we get started today, we want to thank everyone for listening so much. We wouldn't do this at all if there wasn't somewhere out there on the other end. And if you do like what you hear, please tell a friend, spread the good word, and let them know about us, and we'll keep pumping them out. All right, let's get started.
Let's do it.
All right, here we go. Another podcast. We're rolling.
Buon Natale! I'm just so excited. It's the holiday season! The holiday season!
All right, let me set it up.
Hold your horses.
My name is Jason, and I'm joined by my wonderful, beautiful wife, Ashley, next to the crackling fire in our little humble home in Le Marche, Piovico, Italy. We bring to you the podcast from Italy, a little story...
A little slice of life.
Of what's going on. So, please continue.
Yes, it's the holiday season, the doop-de-doo and the dickery docks, and I'm loving it.
We're 13 days away from Ashley's favorite day of the year. You're very, very much a...
Well, don't forget about my birthday.
Yes. Today's the 12th. That is the second holiest day of the year, yes? Today is the 12th of December. It is a chilly, chilly Thursday morning.
Ooh, -8 degrees this morning.
Yes, we woke up to -8. And
I call that a hard frost.
That is a hard frost.
That's a 10-inch dew.
And it's 8:15 in the morning, and I'm procrastinating because I don't want to go outside and start the... We have high pressure, and it's beautiful and sunny, but it is cold.
Yesterday, lots of fog. That was the talk of everywhere we were. We'll get to that later, but... Driving around, it was dense fog. It was kind of cool.
All mm-hmm. right, so let's start off the podcast. Where do you want to go?
The high prices.
High prices
let's
of living in paradise.
Jump right in, yeah.
So now that the year is coming to a close, we get to do all of our paying, all of our busy work. You know, we have to pay this thing and that thing that we kind of put off in doing all these things until the end of the year because we're busy during the summer. And there's a lot of new tax. It's kind of expensive to live
in Italy.
Well,
yeah, we didn't put that off. The new tax just arrived.
There's a new tax called TARES, T-A-R-E-S. And I don't have no idea what it stands for, but it stands for expensive.
Yeah, that's a nice way to say it.
They tied this TARES, new TARES bill into our garbage. And so our garbage has now gone up. Our garbage tax that we pay, but mind you, there's no truck coming to our house to pick up our garbage once
mind you our car has become a garbage truck because we have no garbage delivery
we
or
have no
pickup
garbage pickup so we drive our garbage to the end to the where the main road is, which is 6.4 kilometers. So you can imagine running a business basically every day. When I go out, I'm taking garbage out and bringing food back in.
It's awesome.
So our garbage bill went up 5 times.
Not just like...
$50.
You know. And I understand $50. Okay. 5 times is staggering. And I thought... I looked at that and I thought, this is why I think a lot of Italians don't pay taxes. That's a big generalization, I know. But I thought, this is one of those ones you don't pay, right? Like, that's what I thought. I was like... Because you'll hear these stories where, oh, you don't pay it because then in the next couple months it'll be retracted or changed. And I just thought, okay, this is one you just don't do.
So we go into the town office.
The comune.
This is coming from the comune, uh-huh. The village of Sant'Angelo in Vado, where we go, this is can't be right. Our garbage bill is 5 times as much. They don't even come and pick it up. She goes, oh, yeah, this is scontato. This is discounted 70%.
70%! I was like, oh, my God. She said, oh, yeah, it's been made note, and it's already reduced. And we just thought, oh, my God.
So that was...
it's being contested.
It's being contested. And,
or studied on.
So she told us we must pay the 18 euros that goes to the state of, like, the Italian state. So we paid the 18 euro part, and we're like, what about the other huge amount? And she goes, oh, no, don't pay that yet. Just wait.
So
I don't know. Is this one of those things where everyone waits to see what's going to happen, and then no one pays it, and then it gets repealed?
That's what I keep wondering. Well, how do you... Well, and what was ironic was when I was in her office, she had the newspaper open and the headline said, TARES has arrived and it's no joke. And I thought, no shit. Like, that's why I'm here. Like, this is so ironic. And I didn't know if she saw the irony in that newspaper or what, but it ain't no joke.
So this TARES thing isn't the only thing that's gone up. The Marco Di Bolo, the little...
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it went from 1462 to like 16.
Euro. These little stamps...
It's been 1462 since they changed from the lira.
The little stamps that you... Any official document that you hand in to the state needs to have what's called a Marco Di Bolo, and it's basically just a way for them to get an extra...
now
16 euros. So at the top of each of these official pages will be a little square where you have to, and you go to the tobacco shop and you get these, and they were 1462 because that was when they changed from the lira. It was whatever it was in lira.
Uh-huh.
And now it just went up another $1.50.
Our Permesso packet went up
doubles,
from
the cost that we have to pay for our turning in our immigration thing, doubled in price. GPL, liquid petroleum that most people who don't have wood stoves heat with, has gone up since we've lived here from 60 cents a liter to a euro 20 a liter. And
I saw headlines yesterday saying that since the prices have gone up, old people will die.
Will
freeze to death. And I just thought it was a bit traumatic, but I thought this is what we're going to start seeing all
it's
over.
It's true. I mean, it's gotten,
oh, for sure.
It's gotten, this year's gotten, they're just trying, I think, to tax the middle class to pay for the debt there, you know, pay for whatever. I don't know. I don't want to get into politics.
I know. We normally don't talk about this stuff, but it was just...
It's you
been,
see it. You feel
whoa,
it.
Whoa. We really felt it. And it
was
just...
I mean, food went up. We all saw food go up last January. It's just we came back out. EVA, value-added tax or VAT went up a point.
We just went to Marco's and the toll on the road went up.
Oh, yeah. The Autostrade went up big time.
Where you thought, we're going two exits. How has it gone up like 40 cents? Like, I don't know. It just seemed like quite a steep climb.
Everything got more expensive. So, whew. That we feel these last few days.
And thankful that we have wood and we trade for it and things like that. In the winter, we don't turn on our GPL at all.
No. We if I had to heat our house with gas, it would cost probably about 800 euro a month.
Oh.
Because our tank holds 1,500 liters. And usually I get it when we need about 1,000, 1,200. And the bill's usually about, 1,400 euro. And that should get us through. Like, we used half of that in the fall, and we'll use half of it again in the spring before the nice weather comes. And that's just for the guests because we heat with wood. But my God, if you had a family and you had to heat a house, it's a huge expense.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge.
That's why I dream of heated floors someday.
One day, keep dreaming.
I know. Not at Cacamone.
Christmas being 13 days away, the Panettone boxes are up to the ceiling in the grocery stores. We talked about that, and we need to get on the ball and make Cappelletti.
We're doing it Saturday, baby.
So what are Cappelletti? Explain real quick, what are Cappelletti?
I thought we did. Cappelletti are like little tortellini, and they're what we make in this area.
Little
in the
Marche.
Little hats. Little stuffed pasta hats. And they're teeny tiny, and they're about the size of a postage stamp, and you fold them and into these little hats. And it's a ton of work. It's really fun, but it's like in my family, the night before Christmas, we'd stay up all night making pies, and everyone would be in the kitchen. And so making Cappelletti is kind of the version of my family's pie night, where everyone's hanging out in the kitchen, doing a different project, and kind of shit-talking, gossiping, listening to Christmas music, the fire's going. It's nice.
So that's what we'll be doing this this weekend. We probably, make like 10 kilo?
I don't know. Our chickens are producing 8 eggs a day, and there's only 2 of us, and we can only give away so many. So we've got to make a lot because we got a lot of eggs.
Yeah, it freezes wonderfully, and we'll keep it, and we'll just eat it with different sauces, or you just eat it in broth, and we'll have a bunch of people come over, and we'll probably all do it together because it's much more fun doing those together than by yourself.
I think so, for sure.
So I can't wait for that.
And then Cookie Monster to my right ate all of my cornflake cookies that I made. I was going to do a beautiful blog post and recipe and all of that, and I was setting up the plates and figuring how I wanted to set the scene for the photo. And Jason ate the cookies before.
Too long. I told you. I gave you 48 hours to take those pictures. Nothing happened. In our
there
area,
was 30 cookies.
No, they're tiny. There wasn't 30 cookies.
There were 32, but they're small. But they're gone.
Yeah, 3 days. Okay.
so we're gonna make more today. They're delicious cornflake cookies. They sound like something from Texas. Like, hey y'all, we're making cornflake cookies today. But here they're called biscotti cereale. And cereal cookies, and you just make a really simple dough, 100 grams of butter, 100 grams of sugar, and I think 250 grams of flour, and
two eggs,
a little vanilla, and you could put pine nuts, you could soak your raisins, and some raisins, and if you want to get all fancy, you can soak your raisins in Marsala or Vinsanto, but I kind of like it really simple, and
can I make fun of you 2 seconds?
Sure.
Okay. Your cookies were delicious. One thing that was hysterical is you measured out 4 tablespoons of raisins, which made me crack up.
Totally. He said, I said, there's 4 tablespoons of raisins. Or how much raisins? Or you were saying you want more raisins.
These are great. I'm like, I love them. Make them again, but I want more raisins because I like the raisins.
And I was like, okay, I'll do like 5 tablespoons or something. And he goes, did you measure? And I said, yes. He just started dying. Jason will just like look at it and throw handfuls in until he thinks it's good. I measure. I top off the spoon.
Delicious. And they're just these simple, like...
not too sweet.
No, not sweet at all. You cream the butter and the sugar. You add the egg. And then you mix in the flour and the baking soda and the salt and the raisins. And then you make little balls about the size of, what, a small golf ball?
Yeah.
You roll it in cornflakes.
Now, what I have got to figure out is how to get more cornflake per square inch of the cookie. Because I love... because as the cookie expands... The cornflakes, obviously, there's not as much
surface area.
There's now more surface area. So it's a little science experiment. I'm looking at the last cookie right now, trying not to eat it as we're recording this podcast.
Yeah, no one wants to hear you eat a cookie into a microphone.
Or maybe it makes it more interactive.
Okay, so that and Tumbla.
Oh, bingo. The talk is back that Tumbla Queen is
ready to go. She's dusting off her
hot
beans.
Dice. Yes.
What is real quick?
So Tumbla is the Italian bingo, and last year, let's just say I won big.
Always around Christmas, New Year's,
I beat out a third grader and was like, "In your face!"
it was bordering on inappropriate.
I couldn't help myself. I get really competitive, kind of sweaty too, and
around the holidays, usually there's one at church. The church will put one on. The comune will put one on. The pro local put one on, and they'll have tumble on nights. And everyone goes after dinner. Usually,
and you win like a prosciutto.
Yeah, great prizes, like good prizes, like. Whoever wins this one gets a whole prosciutto or a wheel of cheese or 5 liters of oil.
Yeah, it's great.
It's really fun. And everyone packs into like the auditorium of the school or the...
big cafe kind of thing.
And it's great. It's a good social... when we were at the grocery store yesterday picking up some stuff, the lady who checks us out, Antonella, she lives in Piovico, and she goes, oh, Tumbla is coming next week. She goes, I'm sitting next to you.
Yeah, I asked her if she was ready. And she said, don't forget, last year I called it. I said, last year I want to sit at your table. I want to rub elbows with you. So this year I call sitting next to you. I just thought it was hysterical. So I'm pumped. I'm ready for Tumbla. Get back in the game. Eye of the tiger.
yesterday we drove down to Ostra to visit Marco, our good friend.
Ostra is if you take the coast down from Fano, which is where you hit the coast from our place, to Sinigalia, it's 10-15 minutes kind of down the coast, and then you go inland from there.
And we had lunch at his family's house, and his mother made us a beautiful lunch, and we got to hang out and visit with his parents a little bit. But getting off the...
Wait. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
I was going to jump to his dad, but you're going to talk about the Autostrada.
Yeah, getting off... we talked about last podcast about the fact that prosciutto or different things that are made in Italy, the animals a lot of time aren't raised in Italy. And when we were getting off the Autostrada yesterday, we saw... protesters, young people with Italian flags, that when they saw a animal truck, I don't know, they were just protesting. Like,
with the Italian flag and everything.
Yeah, they were protesting about made in Italy doesn't mean raised in Italy. And I thought that was interesting that there was actually, like, we saw it, we read about it, and then, ooh, hot day.
Oh, whoa, I know. And it is really interesting because you just take that made in Italy mark for granted sometimes. And I think we've talked about sometimes jeans or certain clothes that just have a button sewn on. Once they, you know, half the thing is made in China and then it comes here and they sew on a button and say it's made in Italy. Well, the same thing is happening with food and cheese. And so they'll bring in a cow that was raised from somewhere else, or the milk from a cow raised somewhere else, to make cheese that is supposedly then made in Italy.
And it's cheaper to truck the cheese all the way here, or truck the milk all the way here, than to actually make the milk here in Italy.
So it's like milk coming from Lithuania.
Or who?
Knows? No, one of these articles was something like that. And, you know, pigs coming from, you know, Timbuktu and then being made into prosciutto di Parma, or, you know. So the whole idea of that also is avoid the big labels, because they're obviously cost cutting, and just try to buy local or from the smallest purveyors.
Smaller producers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the big ones do. Mm-hmm. They have to save money, which was interesting. It was interesting to see that coming off, and it was like, whoa, I can't believe we read about that.
Yeah.
Actually doing it. It was great to see young people caring.
Mm-hmm.
But terrible segue into the interview with Marco that we did yesterday.
Yes, but before we get into the interview, I just have to mention that his dad is hysterical. And Marco said to come between like 11 and 12 or whatever. And we show up at 11:45. Marco's dad gets called into lunch at about noon, but lunch isn't quite ready till about 12:20. And
we're just hanging out talking.
And at one point it just reminded us of Gachi. He was like, you know, you don't call someone in for lunch and not have it be ready. When you call me into lunch when I'm working, I come in and I'm expecting to see you pulling it out of the oven. And it was just this kind of throwback to this 50s feel.
He was half kidding, but he was half serious.
Oh, I think it was more serious than kidding, but it was done in a playful manner. But it just cracked me up.
I loved it. It was great.
Because he was just like, I got work to do. I don't have time just to sit here and BS with you guys. And I think it was that mentality of going, now I'm hungry.
We're sitting here looking at this beautiful pasta in the oven cooking. It was great. But set up the interview.
Yes. So after our lunch with Marco, we fired up the mics and I did a little interview with him about wine from La Marque. And I hope you guys enjoy it. And if you have more questions, please send them in, because we'll do another follow up with, you know, some things we missed and some more questions you guys have. So enjoy the interview. Okay, we are joined by a very special guest today, Marco Candy from Marco's Way. Ciao, Marco.
Ciao, Ashley.
So I thought it would be fun to have you on the podcast to talk a little bit about wine from La Marque. And before we get into the wine from La Marque, let's hear a little bit about your story. So you are Marcogiano, you are from La Marque yourself. And what got you into becoming a wine guide and a wine expert? Where did your wine journey begin?
Okay, my wine journey began actually here, because I was born here, and I was born between basically vineyards. My parents had a vineyard, and so they were making wine, and I was just helping them. And then since I was a little kid, I had my hands on the grapes. Let's put it that way.
And what made you want to get into wine tourism?
Okay, wine tourism, because I've been to all the countries like Australia, New Zealand, and US too, and I realized that and those countries, the people, they're making some business out of it. And it's actually quite really pleasant for, of course, for the wineries, but also for the people, you know, discovering new regions, new wines. And so that's actually what I found really interesting.
So for someone who is either planning a trip to Italy or maybe just dreaming of one, why come to La Marque for wine? Let's start with, what kinds of grapes will you find in this region that are unique?
Okay, well, we talk about the La Marque region, of course. La Marque is just one region, one of the many regions in Italy. So actually, Marche is famous for the different varieties that you can find here. And between those, all the indigenous grape varieties that you can find in this region. Of course, well, you know, probably we can start from the Verdicchio, so our most famous white wine from La Marque. Of course, you know, just getting closer to the area where you're staying, the Bianchello del Metaro will be the interesting variety, and then we can go down, scrolling down to the south of the region. We can find the Pecorino, the Passerina, the Maceratino Ribona, and so on.
And Moro di Alba.
And of course, just for staying with the white wines, but you know, if we talk about the reds, we do have, you know, the Conero, so the also we do have the Lacrima di Moro d'Alba, we have the Vernaccia di Serra Petrona, and so on.
Well, so, I say that, and I like that you went on and on with this mix of wines, because I think a lot of people think that the wine from Italy is Chianti. And then a little bit from Lombardy and stop. So I think so many people get used to that Chianti sticker, the little pink sticker and label, and they go and buy something that they're familiar with the name and also not familiar with how many varieties and like you said, how many regions there are in Italy. So there are so many types of grapes and wines to try.
Marche, like any other region in Italy, is about diversity. So, you know, like you said, you know, you said it right. You know, it's not only about Chianti, it's not only about Prosecco. You know, there's a kind of wines you can find in Italy, but, you know, every region has its own typical varieties, indigenous varieties. And actually, it's a part of the fun to discover every single region. You know, discovering through using also the, you know, the wines you can find in that region. So that's actually the nicest part of the journey.
It is. I totally agree, because I've become not a... I like wine. I like my vino. And Jason says, Mama's got her medicine. And I love... We serve only wines from the Marche at our agriturismo, and I'm very proud of that. And I love the ones we've chosen, the winemakers we've chosen, thanks to you in your help. But part of the fun of traveling in Italy is to go to another region and try a wine and just ask... At the restaurant, something local, you know, what is the house red? And most of the time, they won't stray you wrong. And it's just such a pleasure to venture 2 hours and you get such a different variety of at the table, both for the food and the grapes.
No, this is, I repeat, you know, this is the wine, the indigenous varieties that goes along with, you know, the, let's call it the indigenous food that every region or every part of the region, like with, you know, like Marche is divided, the Marche region is divided into 5 different provinces. They have every single part of the, every single province will have its own characteristic food, you know, to match with the particular kind of wine. So this is actually what makes interesting, you know, the combination of food and wine.
Like the Verdicchio or Bianchello with the seafood from the coast is exactly unparalleled. That. It's just perfect. They pair.
Yes. Or think about Verdicchio is produced not right on the coast. It's produced in the castle surrounding the Jesi municipality. So means in the countryside, inland. So not really on the seaside. So it would be nice to have to match with some, you know, white meat, like it's traditional, like a, well, the lunch that today, basically is based on, you know, we had a little bit of a coniglio and, you know, a nice glass of Verdicchio would be interesting. So Verdicchio, it's not only, you need to pairing with fish, but also with white meat, because you have to always think about the area where that particular wine is produced. So the geographical location is important.
And I lost my train of thought. Thinking about the wines from the area, tell us what wines you produce at your house.
Myself, I'm producing 100% Lacrima grapes. So it's a red wine. You know, it's one of the smallest here in the Marche region. Got about 20 producers. Well, minus me. Well, me, I'm not really. I'm just, you know, producing for family and friends. You know, it's not really a proper business. But, you know, 20 producers, around about 400 hectares. So let's say 1,000 acres equivalent.
And Lacrima is very unique.
It is.
Do you want to talk about that? A bit of the history or the flavor of Lacrima?
Now, Lacrima is unique because, unlike all the other wines, majority of the other wines, it's much more floral than fruity. So that actually what really makes these variety really interesting, because it's really flowery. Sometimes I had people that say, no, I don't want, as soon as I mention Lacrima, I say, no, I don't want Lacrima. For me, it's like a perfume. I don't like, but you know, no, the Lacrima, no Lacrima, the different kind of producers. So it means every producer has his own philosophy, his own producer's own typology of wine. So Lacrima is, it's a big nose and it's unique. So you can, you know, between 100 wines, you'll easily recognize the Lacrima, because you will find the scents of violets and roses. And plus, of course, it's a fruity, but much more floral. So it's unique because it's not wines that you can actually compare, or some, you know, closer wine, or some wine that can remind you of the particular variety. So it's unique. So there's actually the... an interesting characteristic of this wine, easily to recognize. Of course, on the other side, sometimes not that easy to, especially if you are the first time, you know, either you like it or you don't. Compromising with the Lacrima, it's not an option, I would say.
And what would you say? We had a question from online that was sent to us about if it's possible by looking at a label to tell the quality of the wine. If there's any characteristics, and I'm thinking maybe like a DOC or something, but by looking at a label, if there's any distinguishing factors or things you should be looking for in a label to signify a good wine?
Right now, I would say no. Well, the main important things that probably you can get on the label is the, you know, the different kind of appellation. So, you know, like Lacrima has the DOC status, so you need to look for a DOC wine.
Can you explain really quick what DOC means?
DOC is basically a denomination of origin control, basically. So it specifies which variety you basically you drinking, which variety, and the geographical area where this variety has been grown and has been processed and transformed into wine. So this actually, you know, is guarantee you that, you know, you're drinking the Lacrima DOC, for example, is going to be produced in this particular geographical area. As just give you a rough idea, it's made of 5 different municipalities: Ostra, Mordalba, of course, Mordalba is the core, San Marcello, Belvedere, and a part of Senigallia. So 5 different boroughs, basically, where you are allowed to produce, to cultivate those grapes. And you're allowed to, you need to make into wine within those geographical area.
Mm-hmm. So to have the stamp of approval and certified.
Exactly. And plus there is some characteristic like the alcohol content. So there are some limitations, but, you know, first of all, the grapes need to come from that particular area.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also processed inside the particular area. So otherwise you cannot really, you cannot do so.
This is the same in the same regards for food, like balsamic from Modena or the prosciutto di Parma and things like that, but just on a wine level. But I was thinking about wines and red, white, and rosé, and I was thinking how rosé has really seemed to take off. Can you explain what rosé is or how it is made?
Rosé, it's, nice, simple. We have two different vinification process. One is white, and the other one is red.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And of course, in order to making rosé, you're using, let's call it the black grapes. And then what you do, instead of leave the skin in touch with the juice for longer, and then in that case, the wine will become red. If you let it go, the fermentation, the maceration goes for a longer time, let's say from one day onwards. Instead, in order to make a rosé, what you do, you just keep the skins in touch with the juice for a shorter time. Could it be a matter of hours, a few hours, up to 12 or up to one day, but not any longer, because the color of the wine lies on the skin. So the longer the contact between the juice, the deeper the color and the red color it will be. So rosé, you decided in order to, to make this contact between skins and the mass, the juice, really, really short, on depending on the kind of, degree of pinkish.
Yes, I find it interesting.
You want.
Jason thought you added red wine to white wine. I remember when we went to Giusti's this spring, and he had the rosé, and he has a Bolo Rosa, which is spectacular, kind of like a rosé prosecco, if you were explaining, a sparkling, very beautiful.
Exactly, because you always have the prosecco. No, this is a sparkling wine made with Lacrima grapes, mm-hmm. and of course Lacrima is a red wine. But if you keep the skins of the Lacrima wine in touch with the juice for just a matter of hours or a short time,
mm-hmm.
and you will get the pinkish color. So you have the rosé. And then, of course, after you have the rosé, it's a sealed version. You can also add some more, what we call mosto concentrato rettificato, some kind of sugar, of course, not the classic sugar, otherwise you commit a fraud. And then and then you may do it yourself, for the second fermentation, for making, the sharp method, but the second fermentation take place in a hot autoclave, so in a bigger stainless steel container where all the carbon dioxide developed is trapped inside. Or, like you're doing for the champagne, for the what we call the classic method, because, of course, we cannot call it champagne. And the second fermentation can take place inside every single bottle, and then you have a...
I just think I find that I really have enjoyed the rosés made from Lacrima. I think, as you were saying, with the floralness, it makes for a really nice rosé that's not too sweet, but just perfect for a sunny afternoon. I love it.
And I would say, would it be, for you, because you are here in Le Marche, it would be far better idea to offer, to drink yourself first and then to offer to your guest, some Lacrima Spumante, would be the rosé version, better than a glass of Prosecco.
Because Prosecco
is not actually from this region, so
yes.
Would it be, far much better, because you can also have the Verdicchio Spumante, you can have the Pecorino Spumante or the Passerina Spumante, you can have the Vernaccia di Sara Petrona, mm-hmm. is the only wine that has three different steps of fermentation, so... It's not even only two, but three different fermentations. So it's unique. So it would be rather interesting to offer those wines better than to offer a Prosecco. But, I'm a Marchigiano.
Exactly.
From Le Marche,
I love it.
I'm supporting my
That's why you're here. We love it. Now, here's another question. What do you see? I've seen this becoming really popular, and people have asked about this. What do you see as the future of organic wines? And how many, true organic wineries are in Le Marche right now, or that you know of? And because I understand this is a very hard certification to get, and does it really mean anything?
Okay. I'll try to explain, because myself, I do have a little farm. So, basically, it's still, my father's farm, but, I'm trying, to convert into from normal, agricultural farm into organic. But you have to figure it out, in order to do so, I'm using, of course, I'm just, I'm not really using certain amounts of, figured out my vineyard, I can use copper and sulfur, but in certain quantities, like for the organic growing, but, I cannot really use pesticides. So in that particular case, I need to, myself to go in with particular tools and, get rid of the weeds and so on. So it's really a lot of work. But, myself, I'm quite happy, to have a, because, of course, I'm producing for myself. But, of course, all my neighbors would do using the normal agriculture, so you know I would get some residual of the things that they spray. So for me to be called to be certified organic would be really well, would be easy if I'm paying, but in fact it would be really really hard to be fully organic. But you know myself, I try to treat you know the nicest way, so the friendliest way towards nature. That's what I'm doing myself. You know, talking about general, there are more and more organic wine producers, of course, organic producers, but talking about referring to wines, also to organic wine producers, because also the people, they become a little bit more aware, you know, of, to respect a little bit more nature, because we've been through, you know, times that we just used nature and we didn't pay much attention. Now we, not because it were in time of crisis, but, you know, just we see how the nature, you know, reverse, you know, towards us, you know, what we did it to basically to her. So it's actually, so we need to be a little bit more careful, but the people it's getting a little bit more sensible towards the you know the that issue. So
is it though? This is Italy. So is it difficult to? Is it much more difficult to get the a stamp that says you're certified to get that characteristic?
No, the like I said, you know, as long as you pay, because it will cost me like my little farm, you know, and it will cost me a lot. So I don't know if I will never be able, well, because I cannot really afford it, because it will cost me too much for I have a little stamp of approval. For me, it's, you know, doesn't really matter because...
So with that being said, that's what I was thinking and kind of going off of. This happens in America too, where a small farm can't exactly, like you're saying, pay. So do you think more wines are actually organic than are certified organic?
This one really depends on the honesty of the people, you know. So, like I said, you know, as long as you pay, you can get, you know, the certification going. And even if you're not, let's say, 100% organic, you know, but you can do so. Of course, there are some bodies that do certify, that do control you and so on. But if you want, you can cheat, basically, I would say. This is no, I shouldn't say that, but you know, but anyway, because but you have to be aware, you know, because let's figure that out what happened here in the countryside and the small farms. In the past, we had lots of people working together, so everything was done by hand, no pesticides or something. And so on. So now, you know, people. It's much more easy to spray to kill all the grass. And in the past, all the jobs were done, but you know, many people. But now the families are
as
much
the community
smaller.
Family, yeah,
exactly. So this, you know, it cannot really happen any longer. But you know, there are some, you know, that one that you can find around probably would be quite well something that you can rely on. The only problem is, and I'll finish. The price, because I got German friends, you know, the price that you pay for organic food in Germany, let's do an example of the milk. If the milk here costs on about 80 cents or let's say 1 euro for the organic one, 80 cents or 1 euro for the normal milk, you'll pay well, at least 150 for the 150 or two euros for the organic milk here in Italy. In Germany, you just pay half the price. So it means you pay for organic milk. In Germany, you would pay the same price that you would pay for the normal milk here. So that's the main difference, is just referring to the price. So that's actually, you know, bigger price, so bigger interest. And so the people that, you know, once there is money involved, it's nice and easy to cheat. You know, means you can get profits. So, and then, yeah, so on.
It's just interesting, I think, the weight that a word like that carries. So tell me about your tours. So Marco's Way gives wonderful tours of the area, which is a really unique way and really one of the only that I know of, and I know a lot, one of the only ways you can, especially from our farmhouse, have a someone come and pick you up and that is from the area and give you a wonderful day of going to some wineries and a cheesemaker and kind of this wonderful mentality of this Italian way, also of kind of this see where the wind blows. It depends on how the day goes, on how many wineries you'll see. It's not so strict like X, Y, and Z that I think that a lot of people enjoy the ease and the kind of spontaneity of, that your tours offer as well.
No, well, my tours, well, I'm basically going to try to, you know, to do my best, but like I'm saying to, you know, to my guests, you know, for me, it's really easy because, you know, majority of the work is done by the producer that will be visiting. So because we talk about family producers, like would it be wine producers or cheese producers or extra virgin olive oil producers. So, you know, talk about family, like, you know, like my small family, you know, so my, like a small farmer. So I just try to, to do my best, you know, the producing. And of course, you know, I'm going to a producer that I have more or less, of course, you know, everyone will have, you know, will probably excel or, you know, not excel so much, you know, but you know, they will put all the passion, all the, you know, into the job that that they're doing. So for me, it's really, really important. That really, what really makes interesting because you know you're getting to know, you know, different kind of family, different kind of reality. And but you know, we talk about something that's 100% true. It's not, you know, it's nothing fake or something.
No, and the
it's
guests,
made up for the guests.
No, and they love it because you never know when you go out with Marco what will happen. We had some guests that loved it because it ended up it was a holiday and the children were home from school and the children were helping pick the grapes and the guests just thought, oh, I feel like we're in a movie. How is this set up? And it just so happens to be that day. And because it is such a family, Marco takes you to such family run places, you get this exactly this glimpse of, you know, farm life and what it is like for these people. You meet the husband and wife and their children who hopefully one day will continue the traditions. And on that, part of why what Marco's doing is so important in this area is because, like I touched on before, not a lot of people are doing this as a guide, but also not a lot of these wineries I shouldn't say know how to promote, but have their doors open or a sign on the road or hours of operation for just general tours. So you kind of still need this key, this guide to help you get into these doors. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. Well, our problem here in the market, we are able to produce, you know, really good wines, good food. Our problem is, you know, in order to communicate to the others what we do here. So this, what I'm doing basically is, and there's only, you know, it's a small part of what I'm doing myself, and just try to, you know, to promote, well, to introduce the people to the that family, and also on the other part to. Let's say to try to, how can I say, to make the family who receives a little bit more open and, you know, in order to realize how important it is, you know, communicate what we do. So this really...
To share their story.
You know, to share because, you know, if... Well, you know, we have great stories, but if we keep it for ourselves, you know, it would those stories will end up, you know. So if you know, if we are able to communicate to let the other people understand what's going on, and it's actually, you know, it's just, for me, it's a sort of two-way channels for, you know, the people that will learn from the family, but also the family will learn from the guests, from the people that, you know, bring it to, you know, to visit that place. So it's, you know, it's an open, a mutual understanding. So, you know, from the farmers, but also from the, you know, from the guests, the people that...
Well, and the power of passaparola, of, you know, spreading the word and kind of suggestions from others that to go, when people go back home, when you go to your Enoteca or your wine shop to say, I visited La Marche, do you have wines from there? And to request them to start ordering wines from the region or to bring a card or a bottle from, or the label from a great bottle you had at a restaurant or at our agriturismo or or somewhere that to that it's okay to be proactive also when you go back home to these to you know your respected country to request, because it is so difficult, I think, for some of these small purveyors, small winemakers to think so big to export to what they think, why would someone in Texas want to drink my wine? You know, I only make 10,000, you know, liters a year or things like that.
No, this one would be important, you know, for the people to get into, you know, the smaller realities like Lacrima or, you know, like given like a Vernaccia di Serra Petrone is almost an unknown wine from the market, but I would say one of the greatest because you can find still sparkling and, you know, like I said before, it's the wine that has three fermentations. So this one would be important for the wine itself. You know, if some people that, you know, tried and keep still talking about that particular wine. I'm not, you know, of course, you know, there are many producers from that particular wine. So, you know, not necessarily talk about one producer, but talk about that wine. Mm-hmm. You know, could it be Lacrima? You know, keep talking about that wine even, you know, outside our geographical borders would be, you know, also important.
It
and of
is.
Course, and, you know, if you want to show off, like suggest to somebody, you know, it's nice and easy to go in any restaurant in the U.S. and say, oh, I'm going to have a glass of Prosecco. But, you know, would it be much more interesting if you, instead of, I'm going to have a glass of Prosecco instead, or I'm going to have a glass of the dry Vernaccia di Serra Petrona, the sparkling version. So in that case, you see if the restaurant is, you know, is prepared or, you know, and also, you know, if the waiters are prepared or, you know, you can judge the, you know, the level of the restaurant straight away, you know, of course. And would it be also proud, you know, and, you could be proud, you know, say, hi, you know, yeah. You know, you can show up, you know. So
exactly. Oh, how do you know about that wine? Well, Marco, thank you so much for answering our questions. Can you let the listeners know how they can find you online?
Yes, nice and easy. Well, they can go to on the internet, www.marcosway.it. And then they can get through my website. And then over there, you know, there's all the information that they contact details. And, you know, I'm just going, you know, all over the market region. So,
and you're on Facebook too?
I'm on Facebook, exactly. Well,
and you've got a great video on YouTube. That's wonderful.
Ah, okay. Yes. Well, there's a...
there's a few ways to find Marcos.
Okay, yes. Also on YouTube. Yeah, you're right. Sorry, me and technology are still...
I'm working on you. I'm trying.
No, you're right. No, actually, because a friend of mine, yeah, she made it for me.
It's beautiful. They did it. She really...
So I'm quite proud. She did it.
Yeah.
You know, just... but anyway, thanks to Claudia. She's down in Australia, but, you know, thanks to her that, if you liked it, so I'm happy. But yeah, Facebook and YouTube also.
Very good. Yeah. Well, thank you, Marco. And thank you for the wonderful lunch as well.
Okay. Our pleasure.
Ciao.
Okay. Ciao, ciao.
All right, great interview. Marco's a great guy. I love his family, and we are very, very lucky to know him and be able to work with him. And it's great to see someone who loves and cares so much about this area and his home and preserving this kind of culture. And I just like everything about him. He's great.
He's a great guy.
All right, that's enough of us today.
Yes. So for the song of the week, I thought let's take it down a notch. Let's go a little bit holiday style. It's December 12th. I'm feeling Christmassy. We got the lights twinkling. So we're going to take one from the three tenors, Luciano Pavarotti and Placido Domingo. O Holy Night, Canticque de Noel.
And take us home. Tell us.
Oh, 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 oh.
They're going to sing it. They're going to sing
it.
You don't have to sing it.
You take it home.
All right. You can find us all over the intraweb. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Vimeo, YouTube.
I just posted a video about the chickens.
Our blog, and it's Latavola Marche, LATAVOLAMARCHE, and that's .com, Facebook, If you can do it.
You can do it. Info at letavlamarque.com for an email. And I'm sure we'll post another podcast between here and Christmas. But
no,
if
guarantees,
not,
no guarantees.
Yeah, definitely no guarantees. And if not, buon Natale, Merry Christmas.
Auguri.
Thanks for listening.
All right, enjoy the tenors.
Appear, and the soul of Pelatis will.